You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Sunday, November 28, 2021. Will you be there? The Spire STL Natural Gas Pipeline and the New Challenge to Already Built Assets. Published by Housley Carr. Determining whether to approve plans for interstate natural gas pipeline projects has never been an easy task for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. There are so many things to consider, chief among them the need for the pipeline, impacts on the environment and landowners along the route, and what it all means for gas customers. But as complicated as the decision-making process may be, at least pipeline developers, gas producers, and customers knew that once a new pipeline was approved by FERC, permitted, built, and put into service that the matter was closed, that is, the pipeline was here to stay. Now, in the wake of a groundbreaking court ruling on a new gas pipeline near St. Louis, things are not so certain. As it turns out, we're intimately familiar with the matter, having just made the case that the 65-mile Spire STL pipeline is an important addition to the regional pipeline network that provides supply diversity, improved reliability, and access to lower-cost gas. In today's RBN blog, we consider the evolution of FERC regulation of gas pipelines and the new uncertainty that all affected parties face. Decades ago, back when natural gas pipelines themselves bought and controlled most of the supply in the gas market, the process for certifying new pipelines was especially complicated and arduous. In essence, the pipeline company needed to prove to FERC beyond the shadow of a doubt not only that the proposed pipeline was really needed by real, provable demand, but that there was sufficient gas supply at the upstream end of the pipe to serve customers through the project's life cycle. Typically, that high bar was met via what you might call a package deal under which gas producers made long-term commitments to supply gas and show that they had sufficient reserves of gas in place. Pipeline companies contracted to buy and transport the gas, and local distribution companies, or LDCs, committed to buy the gas from the pipeline. The pipeline's bundled rates included charges for the gas itself and a range of services, transportation, storage, and peat shaving. Everything was locked down. That all changed in 1992 with FERC Order 636. It said that gas pipelines would only transport and store gas, not buy and sell it, and that shippers would essentially rent space on pipelines between two or more points. Where gas came from and where it went was no longer the pipeline's business. The new buzzwords were open access and unbundled. To give structure to how new facilities are reviewed in the post-Order 636 world, after some experience in the unbundled market, FERC in 1999 issued a statement of policy laying out the hurdles that need to be cleared to get project approval. One such hurdle was a requirement for firm precedent agreements on the project, commitments to sign firm service contracts when the project goes into service, to demonstrate customer demand and the need for capacity. In addition, many other standards were incorporated in the process having to do with the impact on other customers of the same pipeline, on competitors, on landowners, etc. Pipelines already had to clear the very high hurdle of an environmental analysis under the National Environmental Policy Act, through either an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement if it was warranted. Notwithstanding these standards in the policy statement, reliance on precedent agreements became the primary test of need in most cases. The shale revolution gave a new urgency to getting new gas pipelines, and pipeline reversals and expansions, approved and built. Production in the Marcellus, Permian, and other shale plays was taking off and producers needed to add capacity fast to keep pace. Getting approvals for supply-push pipeline reversal projects was relatively easy in that they typically had little or no environmental impact, but some greenfield pipelines, especially in the enviro-conscious Northeast, proved tougher to advance, and some didn't make it past the finish line. Also, there was growing resistance, and not just in the Northeast, from landowners and communities about the eminent domain rights that come with a FERC certificate. Eminent domain is the power for an entity to take private property from another entity for a valid public purpose. The transfer of federal eminent domain to a private pipeline developer was added to the Natural Gas Act by Congress in 1947, making the issuance of a certificate to construct a much bigger deal than it had been. Since 2018, FERC has been exploring possible changes to the 1999 policy statement on the certification of new interstate pipelines. Among other things, FERC has been examining the role of precedent agreements and landholder interests in the decision whether to grant a certificate that includes eminent domain, the Commission's evaluation of project alternatives, and most recently, in a draft notice of inquiry, or NOI, filed in February 2021, the impacts of proposed projects on greenhouse gas emissions and environmental justice communities. Those matters will be discussed and decided over time. The Spire SDL decision was issued in June 2021 by a three-judge panel on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. It said that FERC's August 2018 approval of Spire SDL's plan to build and operate a 65-mile natural gas pipeline between the Rockies Express Pipeline in Illinois and the St. Louis, Missouri, area was unlawful and was vacated or voided, in other words, shut or down. That posed a lot of problems. The pipeline started operating in November 2019, so now it has 2 full years of history as to its benefits and impacts, and Spire SDL has settled in as a key part of enhancing service both to its affiliated utility customer in St. Louis, but also to the surrounding region because of its impact on line pressures. So now it's likely that winter reliability would be endangered if the pipeline were suddenly taken offline. FERC certainly knows this, so it issued a short-term emergency authorization to keep the pipe running until further decisions are made. Why did the appellate court vacate the certificate? Among other things, it found that FERC had not sufficiently analyzed whether the pipeline was needed and thus had given too much weight to a precedent agreement that Spire STL had executed with Spire Missouri, its affiliated local distribution company, or LDC. In other words, the court said that the need justification had come from Spire itself, and thus did not have the credibility that would have come from a precedent agreement with an outside party. An open season for capacity on the pipeline had been previously held, but failed to attract any unaffiliated shippers. Along with vacating the certificate, the court directed that the matter be remanded to FERC for further proceedings. As noted, in mid-September, FERC granted Spire STL a 90-day temporary emergency certificate to allow the pipeline to continue operating to mid-December. Meanwhile, Spire STL tried to get the U.S. Supreme Court to issue a stay of the appellate court's order, but the request was rejected in October. So back to the FERC. The pipeline has applied for a temporary certificate to authorize continued operation until a decision is made, and has also filed a new application for a permanent certificate. No doubt, a decision to approve a new natural gas pipeline, and with that, to grant a private company eminent domain across hundreds or even thousands of properties, requires a lot of thought and consideration. At the same time, though, it's important that gas customers of all sizes have reliable access to gas, ideally from diverse sources and at a relatively low cost. What's unique about the Spire STL case is that, unlike a prospective project, the pipeline has been operating for 2 years now and thereby allows for a bench test of sorts to assess how the pipe has been working in real life, including during last February's Winter Storm Uri, aka the deep freeze. A detailed analysis indicates that the Spire STL pipeline, which connects the bidirectional Rockies Express Pipeline, or REX, to the St. Louis area, has been providing a number of key benefits to Spire Missouri customers: supply diversity, improved reliability, and lower gas costs. First, we'll look at the significance of Spire STL's link to REX, and after that we'll discuss how it ties into the area's gas distribution network and other supply pipelines. We should note up front that, prior to the startup of Spire STL in November 2019, Spire Missouri's St. Louis area LDC received its gas primarily from Enable Midstream's Mississippi River Transmission Pipeline, or MRT, as well as from the Mo Gas Pipeline and the Southern Star Central Pipeline. Connections to those pipelines, which deliver gas primarily from Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas, have been maintained. As regular readers of RBN's blog know, REX, which runs between Wyoming/Colorado and eastern Ohio, started out in 2009 as a one-way conduit to transport large volumes of Rockies gas to the gas-hungry Northeast, but has since morphed into its current role as a massive, bidirectional header system for interregional flows, including westbound flows from the Marcellus Utica. In essence, REX enables Rockies gas, mostly from the Denver-Julesburg Basin, or DJ, to compete directly with Appalachian gas for Midwestern loads, particularly where the eastbound and westbound streams converge. Spire STL connects to REX precisely at that point of convergence, so the customers served by Spire enjoy the supply diversity and competitive benefits of REX pipeline supplies, fed from both the eastern and western U.S. producing regions. It's not just a matter of price. As we mentioned, prior to the operational startup of the Spire STL pipeline 2 years ago, Spire Missouri received virtually all of its gas from points to its south and southwest. That relative lack of supply diversity meant that the St. Louis area had been at least somewhat susceptible to pipeline outages or weather-driven upsets in reliability or gas prices. Spire STL had been selected as a fix for that vulnerability, and Winter Storm Uri provided a test and evidence that Spire Missouri's new connection to REX benefited the LDC's customers during the deep freeze. Gas prices at REX Zone 3, the access point for Spire STL, increased significantly during the worst of February's frigid weather, but nowhere near as much as prices at Enable East, Oklahoma, which spiked to more than $350 and then more than $400 per million BTU. Henry Hub prices were relatively stable, rising to as much as $17.23 per million BTU, but only briefly. By relying on a mix of supplies from REX and the Gulf Coast, and not Oklahoma, during Uri, Spire, Missouri customers saved as much as $300 million, according to company statements. In addition to providing improved supply diversity and protection against supply-impacting weather events, including Gulf Coast hurricanes and the price-dampening effects that come with them, Spire SDL offers a series of important connections in the St. Louis area that support growing gas demand in the city's western suburbs and enhance reliability throughout Spire, Missouri's service territory. The Figure 3 map helps explain why. Before the Spire SDL pipeline became operational, Spire, Missouri's service territory was supplied primarily by the Mississippi River Transmission Pipeline, or MRT, and to lesser degrees by MoGas and Southern Star Central, or SSC. MRT generally moves supplies from the Gulf Coast and Oklahoma via an interconnections with its affiliate Enable Gas Transmission System and via links with the Trunkline Pipeline and Natural Gas Pipeline Company of America, or NGPL, which are largely supplied from the Texas, Oklahoma, and Louisiana through MRT's East Line. Before the Spire SDL pipeline came online, MoGas's flow was split so it could help supply both northern St. Louis and some of the western suburbs, parts of which are served by Ameren, Missouri, another LDC. It's a complicated story, but the gist of how Spire SDL has improved things comes down to this. First, by bringing in a lot of new high-pressure supply from the north off REX, Spire SDL pushes gas west on the eastern leg of MoGas, thereby supporting higher gas flows to the western suburbs. Second, Spire SDL also allows for increased flows in the Lang gas storage field, which helps Spire, Missouri keep pace with wintertime demand. And third, some of the gas supplied by Spire SDL moves south on the northernmost portion of the MRT system, allowing more gas on MRT to flow into the southern and western parts of the LDC's territory. Put simply, the new pipeline is an integral part of the existing gas supply in the St. Louis area. As we said earlier, however, the U.S. Court of Appeals vacated FERC's approval of the Spire SDL pipeline and FERC's 90-day temporary emergency certificate, which allow the pipeline to continue operating, is good for only until December 13th unless FERC extends it or grants Spire SDL's request for a temporary certificate. That is, we'll know within just a few weeks what happens next. What we know already, though, is that FERC takes its responsibilities seriously, and that its primary concern will be maintaining gas system reliability in the upcoming winter. We also know that, as much as the Court of Appeals' June 2021 ruling upset the apple cart, it also seems likely to result in FERC undertaking even more thorough reviews of pipeline applications and, when those applications pass muster, approving certificates that will stand up to any level of scrutiny. That result would probably restore a good bit of investor confidence that's been deeply shaken by the Spire SDL decision. Will You Be There was written by Michael Jackson and appears as the 11th song on Jackson's 8th studio album, Dangerous. The song was also featured in the 1993 film, Free Willy, and is the first track on the Free Willy, original motion picture soundtrack album. Released as the 8th single from Dangerous in June 1993, Will You Be There went to number 7 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart. It has been certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA. Personnel on the record were Michael Jackson on lead and backing vocals, Greg Fillinganes, Brad Buxer on keyboards, Michael Boddicker, Rhett Lawrence on synthesizer programming, Brad Buxer, Bruce Sweating, Paulinho da Costa on drums and percussion, Andre and Sandra Crouch, Andre Crouch singers on choir, Cleveland Orchestra, directed by Robert Shaw, conducted by George Sell on Beethoven Prelude orchestrations. Dangerous was recorded between June 1989 and October 1991 at Record One, Westlake, Larrabee Sound, Record Plant, and Ocean Way Recording in Los Angeles, Smoketree Ranch in Chatsworth, California, and Toad Hall in Pasadena, California. Produced by Michael Jackson, Bill Bottrell, Bruce Sweating, and Ted Riley, the album was released in November 1991. It went to number 1 on the Billboard Top 200 Albums chart and has been certified 8X Platinum by the RIAA. 9 singles were released from the LP. Michael Jackson was an American singer, songwriter, record producer, and dancer. Known as the King of Pop, Jackson is the most awarded music artist in history. He made his professional debut in 1964 at the age of 6 as a member of the Jackson 5. His solo career took off with the release of his 1979 hit album Off the Wall. With the Jackson 5, he released 16 studio albums, 3 live albums, 2 soundtrack albums, 15 compilation albums, and 40 singles. As a solo artist, he released 10 studio albums, 1 live album, 34 compilation albums, 6 EPs, 3 soundtrack albums, and 63 singles. Jackson has sold more than 400 million records worldwide. His many honors and awards include 15 Grammy Awards, 6 Brit Awards, and a Golden Globe Award. He is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame, Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame, and Dancers Hall of Fame. Jackson died in Los Angeles in June 2009 at the age of 50.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.